If the past has taught me anything, it is that nothing good can happen at 4 o'clock in the morning. If the urban myths are true, 4 a.m. is the hour of souls, the time when people are most likely to die in their sleep, the hour when the majority of supernatural activity occurs, the time when only the most hardened criminals are awake, when the drug dealers and petty thieves have settled down for some shut-eye, and only the real evils are still up and marching about on this earth. Nothing good can happen at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yet here I am, 4 o'clock, and it is the best time in the world. The house is silent. From where I sit on the sofa next to the window, blanket pulled over me and curtains open, I can see out onto the pavement below. The streetlights cast a strange orange glow, where the rest of the world exists in monochrome. I don't need to flick a switch to see what I am doing. The light outside provides everything I need. A lone fox canters down the middle of the road, unperturbed in his environment. Scraggy looking and suspicious, he noses round the wheelie bins and eyes the gates into our gardens, knowing how to get in and out without a sound. He knows the world is his, that nobody will disturb him. He trots out of my view, confident in what he is doing. I envy him. I look down, and in the dim illumination from the streetlight, I can see the green-brown tinge on my wrist. I rub at it with my other hand, expecting the brief motion to wipe away the bruise. It doesn't hurt now, and neither it nor its matching twin on the other arm give me any problems. But the discoloration on my skin acts as a reminder I could do without. I listen for a moment, and hear my husband's snores coming from the room next door. Even with the door closed and a wall between us, I can hear him take a whistling breath in and a guttural grunt back out. I imagine him lying on his back, mouth open, exposed and vulnerable, yet still dominating the environment he inhabits. My only companion, and the reason for my state of awake, takes a break from his drink and looks up at me. Beaker of milk clutched in pudgy paws. He smiles, a grin of triumph. A stuffy nose has woken him, and for once, Mummy has caved on her nighttime resolution. She has pulled him out of his cot, still warm in his sleeping bag on this freezing night, and brought him into her room, to sit here and drink milk with her. Best things in my son's life, milk, Mummy and Rabbit, all here at the same time. He sticks the beaker in his mouth and takes another gulp, Rabbit gripped in his other hand. But I don't mind being awake. He is the best companion at this time of night, always happy to be with me, sharing his body heat, even from within the sleeping bag. Just the two of us, alone and quiet. Outside, it has started to rain. The grey drizzle has evolved into a full downpour, large droplets battering the window and filling the street below. Water gathers and rushes down the gutters, cleaning away the rubbish and detritus of the day. The fox has disappeared, and I am not so envious of his situation now. I sit back on the sofa and pull the blanket around me, warm in my sanctuary, content while the world continues outside. There is nowhere I would rather be. No one I would rather be with than the person I am with now. Sometimes, when we're driving in the car, stopped at traffic lights or in a queue, I turn round. He is sitting in his car seat, usually Rabbit keeping him company, and he grins at me and points at something remarkable out of the window, a cow or a digger or a police car, always infinitely exciting. I make a comment and smile back, a smile different to my usual one. The smile from my husband is tired and worn out. To my mother-in-law, it's pinched and forced. This smile starts in my stomach and takes over the whole of me, filling me up with warmth. It's automatic and spontaneous. It ends with a laugh or a giggle or a warm, sticky hug when we're not in the car. I am happiest in his company, in his toothy grin and in the clutches of his sharp fingernails and tight grip. I feel the glow of being the most important person in his life. But at the same time, it's accompanied by a dread in the pit of my stomach. A constant worry about the calamities that will never befall him, that I must protect him from every day. Random things falling, small pellets choking him, a stray peanut. Strangers deciding he is as exquisite as I think he is, and kidnapping him. It stops my heart, imagining these facts. Even a nap that goes on longer than usual must mean he is silently suffocated. I think of the small things, the stuff I can control, the stuff that won't happen, to distract me from the big stuff that might.